Welcome, everyone, to another beautiful episode of the Jabcast. I am one of your hosts, Jared. I've got the other two here with me, Alec and Ben. How are we doing, boys?
Amazing, as always.
Alec, how was your birthday?
My birthday was great. I spent all day watching Young Rock, and then I went to work.
That's amazing. It was a great day. That network television and hard day's work. You really are a boomer.
Nothing like it, man.
You did it reverse order. Ben, how was your weekend?
Good, fine.
Actually, weekend just started.
Yeah, this is basically my weekend. I got nothing going on after this.
Yeah, full disclosure, I've got a booster shot fresh in me right now. So if I slip up and say something like weird, I'm just going to blame it on feverish symptoms.
Hey.
But I feel fine. Any slip ups today? That's the reason. There's finally a reason. All right. Should we jump right into it?
Yeah, I think so.
Sure. Alec, what do you got for us today?
All right. So movie pitches for me, starting off, Jared gave me Jackie Chan in a murder mystery revolving around Little League. It's kind of a difficult one. And I took a more like serious tone. So I'd probably rate this movie like PG-13 type of deal. Okay. It's called Murder in the Infield.
Ooh.
Ooh. Exactly. I like it. Thank you. Well, it starts off when Lycoming County Sheriff Jack Lang, played by Daniel Kaluuya, was recently promoted after 70-year-old police veteran Bob Han, played by Jackie Chan, is forced to retire, and he decides to move to Florida with his wife, Leslie, who is played by Catherine O'Hara. Disclosure, Catherine O'Hara was the first female actress that I found who was of the same age as Jackie Chan and shorter than him.
Oh, okay.
She's the first one I found. I went through a number of actresses. anyway, Bob believes that Jack is not yet prepared for the role of sheriff, but Sheriff Lang pushed hard for this to be approved and is now the new county sheriff. He begins his first week without Bob by his side with a new case that lands right on his desk. And this case explained that three Little League head coaches from different Little Leagues have gone missing in Lycoming County. And after about a week, they turn up dead on the infield of their Little League field. Sheriff Lang knew he had to solve this case fast just to prove that he could handle the job and all this other stuff. And he had to get it done before another body was found. A fourth body turns up and he comes to the realization that he can't do this alone and calls Bob Han. And Bob Han is back in the saddle again. He was only a week away from leaving for his retirement in Florida when Sheriff Lang called him back in. He was right at the point of like accepting that I'm done. This is over. I'm leaving the police world. But he came back and he was determined to solve this case. And unfortunately his experience wasn't enough because a fifth body turns up. After the fifth body turns up, Bob's takes a step back and uses his experience and studies where the bodies are found, what are the connections, what is linking them all together. And it turns out that they're making a direct line down Lycoming County towards Williamport, where the Little League World Series is held every year. So now there's a whole new sense of urgency because the Little League World Series starts in 2 weeks. You got to find out who's doing this before a problem shows up at Williamsport. They lock down everything for a week and nothing turns up. So Little Leagues are like, we have to get this game in for this last week so that way we can get and start the World Series on time. So they decide that they're going to put cops with all the head coaches around Lycoming County and close to Williamsport. So after they all take the field and everything, they decide they're going to follow all their respective coaches home. So the Benton Bears head coach, Aiden Owens, who is played by Patrick Renna, who plays Ham in Sandlot. Right when he leaves, Bob is his watch, and he decides he's going to follow him all the way home just to make sure it's good watch for a little bit. The Benton Bears are the favorite to win the Little League World Series at this point. Bob parks down the street a bit, typical surveillance, and then he notices a familiar car pull into the driveway about 5-10 minutes after Aiden gets home, and it's Sheriff Lang's car. And Bob's frantically trying to call Jack, get a hold of him, see what's going on, and he's not answering. So Bob's worried. Is his worst nightmare coming true? Is his former partner the murderer? He decides he has to head in now. So he rushes in, and as he's approaching the door, he can hear the struggle inside. Then he kicks down the door, runs in the living room where Aiden is being held at gunpoint, not by Jack Lang, by Brian Patrick, who is played by Bill Romanowski. Brian Patrick is the head coach of a very poor little league that never wins and always gets demolished by the Bears. So Bob calls for backup, but he knows it's not going to be there in time. Typical cop thing. So he talks him off the ledge, ends up getting him to put down the gun and tell him where Jack is and if Jack's still alive. And it turns out Brian was able to knock out Jack and put Jack in the trunk of his car. So he's alive and well, and actually on scene. And then they end up getting Brian taken into custody, put him in jail. Bob is able to disarm everything and handle everything on his own, showing he still got it, but he feels comfortable leaving the county in the hands of Sheriff Lang. Aiden would go on to lead his team to win the United States Championship and defeat Mexico in extra innings to win the Little League World Series overall. Sheriff Lang is studying from other seasoned cops and state troopers to become even better. And Bob and Leslie finally retired and live in Florida, and where they relax with their toes in the sand and drinks in their hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Incredible.
Yeah. Very sorry for the long-winded one, but like I said,
that was fine.
My mind just went with this one, and I was like,
yeah. I mean, a lot of times with murder mysteries, you have to do a lot of explaining.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was really well done. I like the toes in the sand at the end. You know, they always have to get that happy ending for the person that solved it. Jackie Chan. So how tall is Jackie Chan? Let me guess. 5'3".
Right, yeah, you can guess. You think he's 5'3"? Ben, do you have a guess?
5'2". Just to be different.
He's 5'9".
Oh, okay.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
I don't know why when you were like, I just scroll a long time to find someone shorter.
I did, because all the women I were finding were like 6 foot. I'm like, what the hell? That are like in their 70s. I'm like, wow. This is weird.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I kind of did a little like digging to create Bob Han. Bob is the name of Jackie Chan's character in the Spy Next Door movie that he's in, where he just plays like a spy. His character's name is Bob. And then in The Karate Kid with Jalen Smith, his name is Mr. Han. So I just put the two together.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot they didn't make him Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, he was Mr. Han. So I took Han from there and then Bob from The Spy Next Door and just put them together.
Yeah.
Genius.
Nice.
I know.
I like it.
I was struggling to think it through for a little bit, because at first I was like, Little League, like I don't want kids getting killed.
Little League murders.
So I'm like, how am I gonna get Little League in there?
Yeah.
And I kind of figured this would probably be the easiest and safest way to get Little League involved.
Yeah. Yeah. I purposely tried to throw you a curveball, not to no pun intended there, you know, two very differing things. Little League.
It was fun. I liked murder. It a lot.
Good.
That was a good one.
I'm trying to challenge you boys.
I know. Like, I like that. I like what I tend to do is I'll kind of lead with mine right now. I like to put two things that make sense, with a third one being like how am I going to get that? Because I gave Ben action genre about the WWE, but it's starring David Spade.
So yes, you did, Alec.
I'm excited to hear where this goes.
Yeah, so as Alec said, he gave me David Spade in an action movie about the WWE. I took some liberties with this one. There's not as much action as I'm sure Alec was hoping for. But it's called The Power of the Dolph. So the premise is Dolph Ziggler, who's a real wrestler. He's played by David Spade. He's reached the end of his career. Right when he's about to call it quits, however, old demons come back to haunt him. Dolph is given one shot at redemption in a Hell in a Cell match against 19 of his worst enemies. The cast is David Spade as Dolph Ziggler, The Rock as John Cena, Triple H as himself, The Undertaker as himself, Tim Robinson from I Think You Should Leave as The Rock, John Cena as Chris Jericho, and Daniel Kaluuya as The Wrestling Ring. The plot... Yeah, you can imagine that. I had to include Daniel Kaluuya in here somewhere, so you can imagine him as the wrestling ring. So the plot, Dolph Ziggler, played by David Spade, he's just won an exhausting ladder match and solidified his place as one of the best wrestlers of all time. Ladder match being the one where you like climb up the ladder, get the briefcase. I don't know. I don't watch WWE.
The Money in the Bank match.
Yeah, there you go. As he walks back down the tunnel to the locker room, thoughts of retirement rush through his head. It's all supposed to be an act, but the pain and soreness in his joints is real. Dolph decides to call his wife and talk it over with her. In the locker room, Dolph sits alone after everyone else has left. He turns to pack up his bag when suddenly he hears footsteps start to approach him. "So you thought you could just retire, huh?" a voice says from the shadows. Out walks none other than The Rock, played by Tim Robinson, holding a brown paper bag. "There are pictures in here that could ruin you. You're going to do exactly what I say," he tells Dolph. The Rock then explains to Dolph that they need one more wrestler to participate in the upcoming Hell in a Cell match. The match will be rigged in The Rock's favor, but he promises to pay off each participant as thanks. Dolph has no choice but to agree. Dolph is now caught between his morals and his public image. This match goes against the integrity of the sport, but if those pictures get out, it would be the end of him. What are the pictures even of? Dolph racks his brain, but cannot remember doing anything shady. Struggling, Dolph goes to longtime wrestler and friend Chris Jericho, played by John Cena, for help. Understanding his problem, Jericho agrees to help Dolph shut down the match and take back the photos. "You wrestle, I'll take care of everything else," says Jericho. Training montage. Finally, the day of the match has come. Dolph is in great shape, but Jericho has had no leads with the photos. Dolph has no choice but to fight, but he's not going down easy. He plans to win. The match begins. Among the 19 other wrestlers are Triple H and The Undertaker, who are both favorites to win. You can just imagine who the other wrestlers are. I didn't feel like casting 19 other people. It's kind of interchangeable. The match starts evenly, but Dolph is suddenly jumped by 18 of the other wrestlers while The Rock stands off to the side. The Rock turns to the audience, pulls a brown paper bag out of his waistband, and grabs the mic from the ringside table. The Rock explains that he has pictures implicating Dolph in a terrible crime. He pulls out the pictures and shows everyone. The pictures show Dolph walking around the killing fields with Cambodian dictator Pol Pot. The audience turns on Dolph, who is being pummeled, and he feels his career has ended. Suddenly, the lights go out. A single light bulb illuminates towards the edge of the tunnel. Then the familiar music begins to play. John Cena, played by The Rock, rushes into the ring and throws all 18 wrestlers out. The crowd goes crazy. Now it's just The Rock, John Cena, and Dolph in the cell. "Are you ready, Dolph? It's just like we practiced," says Cena. Dolph looks at him and nods. Dolph and John set up for an elaborate finishing move, contorting and wrapping themselves around each other. They climb the cell and tower above The Rock, who looks on in horror. Dolph, who's basically piggyback riding John Cena, pulls out a gun and shoots The Rock directly in the face, killing him instantly.
Wow.
The crowd erupts, and the duo return down to the canvas where they claim their prize money. Fast forward a year, Dolph is serving a life sentence for the murder of The Rock. The pictures turn out to be Photoshopped, but no one believed them anyway, because there's no way Dolph Ziggler was an adult in the early 70s and also now. Running the events back in his head, Dolph leans against the cold, hard cinder block walls of his cell and smiles.
Very nice.
Wow.
Very nice. What was this called?
Power of the Dolph.
Power of the Dolph, that's right. Very nice. Yeah, Alec, I have to give you credit first. I love the idea of David Spade in the WWE.
I feel like a movie about WWE with David Spade would be.
Yeah, it'd probably be in lieu of like Joe Dirt.
Yeah,
the same vibe as that. Yeah, I love
David Spade. It definitely wouldn't be an action film.
But yeah, yeah. I love how they shot The Rock in the face. I knew something like that was coming. I'm starting to know your tricks, Ben Wayman.
Yeah. No, I got to keep changing it up.
Yeah.
I got to keep it unpredictable.
Yeah. No, it's good. I liked it. I'd love to see it.
Good.
There's been a weird amount of wrestling movies in the last, like, I don't know, 5 years. Like, there's one with, like, Florence Pugh, and it was, like, produced by The Rock. I think he was in it for one scene or something. So, like, they're trying to push it again. But, hey, maybe they'll get yours.
I like WWE.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Man, I was obsessed with it as a kid. I wish I could get into it the same way I was back then, but, you know,
I'm into, like, all the documentaries on Peacock for WWE. Like,
oh, those are cool. Those existed.
Yeah, they have endless documentaries. And, like, I really like listening to all the behind-the-scenes stuff of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the wrestling's cool, and, like, it's entertaining to watch. But, like, I only watch big, what used to be pay-per-view, but is now, like, exclusive on Peacock events, like the Royal Rumble and, like, WrestleMania. I don't really watch, like, the Monday Night Raw all the time. Gotcha. Because, like, the Royal Rumble is pretty entertaining when there's, like, 12 guys in the ring trying to fight each other. Like, those are the ones that the events that I like for WWE.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, Ben, well done.
Yes.
Hopefully they'll pick it up. Okay.
Streaming now on we have Peacock, mine. Summer 2022.
Yeah, Peacock's really struggling.
Yeah.
So Ben gave me Lin-Manuel Miranda in a musical drama about Donda 2. So here we go. Upon hearing of Kanye West's new album, Donda 2, and the revolutionary use of the stem player to consume it, Hamilton creator and star Lin-Manuel Miranda thought his career was over. How could he top this? Lin-Manuel stayed up for days straight, writing piles and piles of script for dozens of different play ideas, sending them to every director, producer, and venue in the world in a futile attempt to take the spotlight away from Kanye and his album. Driving himself insane, Lin-Manuel was at a loss. No one's called back, and Kanye's stem players are selling like hotcakes. He breaks into a somber song accompanied by just a piano, reminiscing on the days when Hamilton was selling out, when everyone was talking about it, even when people that never once cared about theater prior to that. And finally, to the amazing and undeserved moment when Hamilton was released on Disney Plus. That's when it hit him. He needs to release Hamilton on his own stem player. He got in contact with Elon Musk for the tech side and Dr. Dre to help mix the audio to be played on the device. Together, the three of them engaged in a dope-ass 1v1v1 rap battle to work through their ideas and brainstorm. The device will be able to project the entire musical production in a 3D hologram wherever the user desires. After finalizing the design, all they need is a name. They decide on the at-home soundstage for Hamilton or other lesser experiences, or ASS for short. They began advertising and promo for the release, and before long, Hamil fans were jumping online in droves to pre-order their very own asshole for a reasonable price of $1,849. This is the cost of a premium theater ticket to the show, plus $1,000 for the tech. Lin-Manuel has won. The asshole was selling way more than the stem player, and Kanye's stem player was pulled from the market entirely. The entire country breaks out in a united anthem, cheering for Lin-Manuel and cursing Kanye to oblivion. The credits roll. And in an end credit scene, Kanye is seen polishing off a robotic replica of himself. For its heart, we see a repurposed asshole. On the android's chest, there's an identification code that reads, "Super unanimously preferred electronic rapper, absolutely set on suppressing Hamil fans for obtaining listening electronics," or "Super Asshole" for short, and then black. And this movie is called Hamilton subsequent movie show, Larceny of Innovative Device from American Lunatic for Make Benefit, Once Popular Thespian of Americana.
Borat.
Jared, that was perfect.
Thank you.
That was good.
I'm a huge acronym guy, so that was right up my alley. That was so funny.
That was pretty good.
I really wanted to just go crazy with the Borat title. And then I was just filling words in and let the plot write itself from there, basically.
Can we make that? Can we use the entire title of that movie as the title for this episode?
Maybe.
No space.
That would be hilarious.
I don't know the character limit.
Single space. I'll just capitalize the first letter of each word.
Yeah.
So who was in the rap battle? It was Lin-Manuel Miranda, Dr. Dre, and who?
Elon Musk. Oh my
God. It's even better. Oh, man. Oh my God, that's so funny. And you set up a sequel. They're yeah. for a sequel as well. Yeah. So, my God, beautifully done.
Thank you. Thank you.
A plus.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Well, how about we hop into this discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's segue.
Yeah, let's segue noise.
Segues are amazing.
This is wait, actually, what does a segue sound like? Like the vehicle.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Something akin to that, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there electric?
Yeah, maybe we'll just, Alec, you can just find a quick soundbite instead of even saying we're segueing, just go
just like yeah. hit a button.
Yeah. Anyway, this is something I saw on probably Reddit months ago at this point. But someone proposed the idea. This isn't necessarily what I believe. I just wanted to talk about it. If Batman and Superman switched rogues galleries, no villain would last more than 10 seconds against their new enemy.
But so, you thought like, it was Spider-Man.
Did I say Superman? Spider-Man.
Yeah. Batman and Spider-Man.
See? There I'm it crazy. Is. There but is. Yeah, so I'm that's saying. Like Spider-Man side, Green Goblin, Sandman, Lizard, Electro. They would be fighting Batman, and then Two-Face, Joker, Bane, Mr. Freeze. They'd be fighting Spider-Man.
So I think we can all agree on this. This is not true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not true.
Batman would lose almost instantly.
Yeah, there's no just for. No, Batman would stand no chance against any villains from Spider-Man.
But the Batman villains going to Spider-Man, the Spider-Man universe, like they're just guys. Like yeah, the Joker's just a guy.
It's a major downgrade because they're all just like crime bosses.
Yeah, they're just people. They're not. Yeah. They don't have any superpowers.
Yeah, like that's what Spider-Man Batman, takes down in the opening scene to a movie or a comic or something. Yeah.
Before and the then conflict. Like Batman himself inherently is also just a guy. So like yeah. he might have like armor, but like I mean it's not unrealistic to assume that like Electro kills him in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's got Batman has always got the prep time that people love to bring up, but I hate talking yeah, sure. about that because like you know, he took down Superman with prep time, so he can do anything, but
it's true.
Yeah, like Rhino, Batman against Rhino, get out of here. Electro, you said he could probably take down Vulture. He's like low tier. Shocker, probably. I'm trying to think of some. Sandman, he wouldn't know what to do with.
No chance.
Although he has fought Clayface and they're pretty much the same. Green Goblin would whoop him up and down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't even be close.
Yeah, because he's crazier than Batman is.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now, does Batman have Robin in this fight, or is it just Batman?
No, just him.
Because even with Robin, I think he dies faster.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Robin.
Somehow it's a liability.
Robin messes up and gets him killed.
Like, who in the Batman universe, villain-wise, has, like, power?
Has a shot at Spider-Man? Well, Bane, kinda, with Venom.
I feel like if we send Spider-Man over to Gotham here.
Yeah.
Different villains are going to surface as like the top tier because he, like you guys said, he's going to wipe out all the big ones because they're just people.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know many that have,
I mean, power. I know Darkseid's a villain. Darkseid is like really powerful. He's basically Thanos, I guess, in the DC universe. Who else is there? There are a bunch of powers. Man-Bat.
Yeah. Poison Ivy. She has powers.
Yeah, she has powers.
True.
That'd be a cool fight, actually. Poison Ivy and Spider-Man.
Is Martian Manhunter's not a villain, right?
No. He's a member of the Justice League.
What about what's his name? Mr. Freeze. He's kind of
powerful. Yeah, like he's got the freeze gun. It's nothing special about him. And Spider-Man could break his armor really quickly, and then he'd be done for. Although I will say Spider-Man also has the same weakness that Batman has in that he won't kill. And these guys want to kill him.
Yeah.
So he might be at a disadvantage just because of that.
Scarecrow?
Don't all the Spider-Man villains want to kill him anyway?
Yeah,
it's relatively.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
How many times has Spider-Man been shot at though? Like Batman gets shot
a lot, but he dodges it. Batman just takes it on the chin.
Yeah.
Or it mortally wounds him.
Yeah.
I think we can agree that no, Spider-Man doesn't get close to touching Gorilla Grodd.
Spider-Man's really strong.
Gorilla Grodd, where is
he? Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, dude, you're telling me he's going to beat this gorilla? There's no shot.
Oh, my God. Well, who? Spider-Man's...
Dude, he's played Go ahead, man.
I'm he's beaten Rhino how many times?
Yeah, but this is a giant gorilla.
Yeah, but Rhino's a mecha. I don't need to look. I know who Gorilla Grodd is. Rhino is a mecha rhino. All right, here we go. We're going to go on.
Wait. Jared, you know, this is kind of unrelated. You remember the Spider-Man game, the very beginning when you fight Fisk and the truck drives through the square? I was watching a guy play the game on stream when it first came out. And I put a picture of Gorilla Grodd in the outline, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, I know what he looks like.
Yeah, he's just a monkey. the guy was
playing. Like, it's such a generic gorilla. And you're like, in case you need a reference.
There's a guy. I was watching this guy play Spider-Man on stream. And a truck drove through the square where the fighting was happening.
Yeah.
And this guy thought that the truck was Rhino. He's like, oh my God, Rhino, he's a truck now.
Yeah,
you believed it.
This is definitely not a Spider-Man villain.
And then,
there's no way this is a Spider-Man villain. This is this is what's his name? The big gorilla from Tarzan. That's who that is.
Patrick.
Oh, Bateman. The gorilla. Well, the gorilla was. He's not even really a Batman villain. He's a Flash villain. That should tell you something. If the Flash can take down Gorilla Grodd.
True.
The Rhino can lift 100 tons. And Gorilla Grodd can lift 600 kilograms.
What did they did these two go to like the world's strongest man or like the Arnold Schwarzenegger competition and figure this out? How'd they do that?
Well, they've shown the Rhino lifting some crazy heavy stuff, and Gorilla Grodd is just a gorilla, so like they know how strong gorillas are.
This is like really deep into the Batman lore, but there's a version of Batman called the Batman Who Laughs. I don't think Spider-Man gets close to beating him, though. He's a Batman villain. He's a version of Batman who, like, went insane after he killed the Joker. Mm-hmm. And he, like, went to every other universe and killed, like, every other Batman.
Yeesh.
That's basically the gist. You can go ahead and look it up. But he doesn't.
Yeah.
Spider-Man doesn't get close to touching him.
Mm-hmm.
Ra's al Ghul doesn't beat him either. I'm totally joking.
I don't know about that. Professor Pig? He's going to wipe the floor with obviously. Spider-Man.
The Prowler.
Either way,
Prowler. Yeah,
both.
Prowler's basically Batman.
Going both directions, the top villain in each universe is going to change.
Yeah,
for each superhero.
Yeah, I would agree.
Not the villain order is going to flip over 100% both ways.
Jared, mm-hmm. before we move on, really quickly, how would you feel about a Scarecrow type like origin movie similar to Joker, like in that same style?
I don't know. I didn't even think Joker deserved an origin movie.
Dude.
I really don't like villain origin stories. Like, I liked Joker. I like it a lot less now, just after watching Taxi Driver and just like figuring out it's a lesser version of Taxi Driver. But
basically.
I don't know. Cause like the whole time you're watching it, I can't really care about the character if, you know, they're going to turn into a villain at the end. You know, like, you're not supposed to root for them. And I know what happens at the end. So why am I engaged?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I don't know. Dr. Doom is my favorite villain ever. Favorite Marvel villain, favorite villain ever. And I see a lot of people talking about an origin story for him. And he's got one of the most interesting origins ever. And I just don't think we should waste our time on that. Only because, so I'll give Kraven the Hunter as an example. I don't think he deserves an origin story. And the problem that they run in with things like this is you have to make a villain for the villain. And how do you make the villain not, like, how do you make him worse than the protagonist without also making the audience recognize that they're just both bad? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one's just less bad. Morbius is another example. He's like fighting just another vampire. So like, how do you differentiate? I don't know.
Right.
I never really have an interest in villain stories.
Fair enough. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
Maybe one day. Maybe, you know, something might change my mind. But as of right now, I'm pretty just lukewarm on them.
All right. So we good there?
Music?
I think so.
Yeah, let's talk music.
Yeah, let's head into album trading and reviews.
All right, tell me what you thought.
Yeah, so Jared gave us this week. I'm assuming you guys all know how album trading works. I've explained it every time. Jared gave us 1,000 Gex by 100 Gex. I had listened to this album before. Alec had not. So one third of us are going into this completely blind. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Alec. Alec, give us your thoughts on 1,000 Gex.
I think for me, a lot of my thoughts are very similar to the single that we discussed last week. This is definitely this album had a bunch of songs that I would definitely throw on when I'm at the gym, but not really something I probably would listen to driving to work. You know what I mean? But overall, it was pretty good. My Spotify must have updated and it like mixes the songs together, like the last like 5 seconds mixes with the first 5 seconds, and the album went by like that in the gym. So, and it mixed pretty well together, so I didn't even realize the album was over. But I gotta figure out how to change that, because that might change how I hear some of these albums. But
yeah,
overall I liked it. Not something I probably would put on every day.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Ben?
Yeah, I've listened to this before. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I think I appreciate it more now. Now that I have a little bit more of an expanded palette. I'm still not a huge fan of their sound. Jared, what would you call this? It's somewhere between like hyper pop and like
hyper pop and like
electric.
It like really gets into EDM in some spots.
Yeah.
So like house hyperpop. Mm-hmm. God, also, can I just say for the record, I really hate talking about like the subgenres like that. I know using it is like the best way to describe it, but I can't say those words without feeling like an idiot. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Like you're like sipping like a wine and you're like, oh, it's like a house hyperpop type vibe.
With like, shades of retro.
Yeah, like it's just inherently pretentious. Yeah. Like, but it's
almost like you're going through a wine tasting.
Yeah, yeah. Like I feel like I such a snob even.
Chocolate in this.
Yeah, like using that word, I'm like hyperpop. I'm like, ugh. Like if I told my dad that, he'd be like, what is hyperpop?
It's also like, it's also difficult. I feel like today, a lot of stuff I listen to anyway, it's hard to categorize into just one genre.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this is like math rock with like, like jazz fusion with, and I'm like, can we just have one word to describe this?
Alternative. That's what Apple Music does.
Yeah, alternative. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not pop and it's not rock, so. Yeah. I guess it's alternative.
Yeah, did they? Yeah, it's called alternative on Apple Music. So,
yeah. Anyway, getting back to 1,000 Gex, I really liked Stupid Horse this time around. Thought it was kind of funny lyrically. Everything else kind of blended together. I think it all sounds, for an album that's so unique and distinct, I think it also starts to sound the same at some point.
Yeah, I would agree.
But yeah, definitely interesting. I would like to see where they go from here. This is almost 3 years old now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be 3 in May. So I don't think they've released another album since then. They have a single that we listened to last week.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jared, what are your thoughts?
So this was my first actual jump into their music. Ben said he didn't peg me for a 100 Gex fan, and I didn't even know if I did, and I still don't. This was pretty hit or miss for me. I really like Money Machine and Stupid Horse, like Ben said, and it was like Geck. Maybe there's another Geck on there. Geck. Those are probably top three. It was talking about like the pretentiousness of it. It felt like one of those art house projects that's purposely bad. It almost felt like a trap, You know what I mean? Like, it felt so bad that they're like, oh, you know, this is garbage. Let's just throw it out and people eat it up. And I know a lot of people do. There's like a, there's a cult following of this. And I definitely sense that, but at the same time, I didn't hate it. So maybe I'm falling for it. Maybe I just genuinely like it. But yeah, not my favorite. I definitely like what they're going for. I think I want to explore hyperpop a little more, maybe just find some other artists that might, I don't know, tickle my fancy a little more than all 100 of those Gex. Do we know what that name means, by the way?
No idea.
Look that up. I'll look
it up. I was thinking it's probably something with like an audio plugin.
Probably.
But I could be way wrong. So
I don't know. I believe you can.
Where are the other 98 Gex then? Where are the other 9,998 Gex? Ew. Oh. Yeah, your expression gives it away.
Hold on. I read one. It's the first result from Urban Dictionary.
Oh, well, that's all.
Put that in, paste it in the outline, if you will.
Okay. Yeah, this is apparently what it is. I'm seeing multiple sources. All right. Yeah. We can talk while I'm doing that. Let's talk about Alec's album. Alec, would you like to introduce it?
Yes. Like I said last week, was scrolling through Spotify and found this gem called Earthling by Eddie Vedder. I'm a fan of Eddie Vedder, and he was in Pearl Jam, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like Pearl Jam, so I figured I would like this album as well. And I actually didn't like it that much. It was all right. It seemed very abstract. And it just wasn't what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's why it kind of like threw me for a loop, I guess. But I don't know. I think I'm going to listen to it again and try to go through it and listen to it differently now that I know what his like solo sound is. I guess I was expecting a little more of like a Pearl Jam feel than what it was. I don't know. It seemed different.
Guy from Pearl Jam probably should sound like Pearl Jam a little bit.
Yeah, like that's kind of what I thought. I mean, Eddie Vedder is amazing. Sound-wise, it was incredible. And I thought overall, it was a good album. I liked a number of the songs. However, like I said, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's fair. Ben, you want to chime in?
I like Eddie Vedder. I like his voice. I don't like this album. Kind of similar to Alec. When older rock stars or like rock groups make an album like way after their like fame has kind of subsided a little bit, it usually sounds really like, how do I explain this? You know, when COVID started and the celebrities all did the video of Imagine. Yeah, that's kind of what that feels like. It kind of feels like you're looking at like a figure who's so far removed from everything, trying to still act like they're on like some kind of level similar to you. It's hard to explain. Like Eddie Vedder in the 90s, Pearl Jam was super gritty and super all about like, they had that song Jeremy about the kid who like killed himself at school or whatever. Mm-hmm. Really like emotionally impactful stuff. And now he has like the power of right from this album. It's really like preachy, really like out there. But at the same time, this album is also not that. Like he has a lot of songs that are, like Alex said, like really abstract, lyrically and conceptually. I like his voice. I think he has a fantastic voice. He has a great vocal range still, even 30 years after he like first broke onto the scene. But it's just not for me. I just don't like the way this sounds. When it comes to solo work for me, like when a member of a band makes a solo project, I think I connect them and that group forever. Like Eddie Vedder will always be like Pearl Jam to me. So listening to him do solo stuff that sounds nothing like Pearl Jam is really like, I just don't like it because I just don't associate those things together.
Right.
But yeah, not a huge fan of this one. Alec, I don't mean to bash the album that you recommended for us, but just not a huge fan of it.
He didn't like it much either.
I didn't really like it that much. Like I said, I just found it and I'm like, ooh, Eddie Vedder. Like, yeah. He released something. Let's see what it is.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. For me, yeah, I hated this. Let me start by saying I've never really listened to Pearl Jam much, so I'm not that familiar with Eddie Vedder to begin with. Yeah. So I don't have anything to compare it to as far as that goes. But as soon as it started, one of you said he is going for like this abstract vibe, which is 100% correct, because it starts off, and this is kind of goes with the album art too. He's talking to like a spaceman or something, and yeah. Like how trippy and stuff is. At one point, it felt like he was trying to do like his best impression of what David Bowie goes for in some stuff.
Yeah,
but it was just such a misfire. And I legitimately cannot remember a single word that he said, like a single lyric. It was like one in one ear, out the other. A song went in, and I'm like, I don't remember that song at all.
Yeah,
like I don't know if my brain was trying to like erase it as it was being consumed, but I don't know. It's just, I really did not like it. And I can't even 100% explain why. I guess I really don't have to. I just didn't like it. I don't know.
Yeah.
You guys will have to recommend me some Pearl Jam classics one day so I can get a good representation of him. And it was funny, right before I listened to this, I was driving and was listening to the radio. And he was hosting, he like hijacked one of the radio stations for a couple hours or whatever. And so he was talking. So I listened to him for like 30 minutes and, you know, he kept interrupting the songs, talking about his career and everything. And on a personal level, he also just really irritated me, like as a person. I thought he was so obnoxious. And I don't know if that ruined or put a bad taste in my mouth going in, but I was like, God, I already don't really like this guy just from that 30 minute chunk of him talking, but I try not to hold it against him.
Yeah.
I
don't know. Some of that like backstage artist stuff is heavy scripted and it's really weird.
Yeah.
But Ben gave us Prince.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Personally, I love Prince. Prince never disappoints. This is not,
but
yeah, but this, the Gold Experience was the album. This isn't my favorite Prince album. I thought it was this album. I like all the songs. I can't stand the like, it's called the NPG operator. The like, these songs are about this, and I'm like,
what does that stand for, by the way? Does anyone know? NPG.
I have no idea.
Like the little the following songs are about this. You unlocked this division. I'm like, all right, that, like, I skipped all of those. I'm like, these are annoying.
Yeah,
but like I've heard this album before. I've heard all of those things before.
Oh,
I never.
It was It was MPG is the record label that Prince founded, MPG Records.
Oh, well.
Sorry, continue.
The little automated Siri-like voice, didn't need that. I mean, I didn't mind the like concept of like trying to split an album up and like make it like, oh, here there's sections, but I definitely think there was a much better way to split it up than using Siri from 95.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna piggyback off of that. This was weird, a weird experience for me. You guys gave me, was it Purple Rain last year?
Yeah.
Which I did not like. Say
this was more of a Bronze experience?
No, I would say, I'd say it's Beryllium. It's like that weird multi-chromatic like cubic element that's like, I think it's liquid at it was just weird. It was all over the place and not necessarily in a bad way, but because of that, there were, like Alec was saying, the operator things. This was a concept album, so operator, so like right here, NPG Operator Number Two, and then it's Most Beautiful Girl in the World and Dolphin after it, and they are kind of a collective that was introduced by Operator Number Two, and then Three comes along and it's supposed to be like a separate thing in a way. So there were chunks of this album I liked, chunks of this album I was lukewarm on, and then chunks I hated. P Control might have been the worst song to start this off for me. That like really, like I thought it was going to be an hour of that. I'm like, oh no, I'm in for it. But then it switched up and there's some really good stuff in here too, like The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. Now I Hate You. Like there's some good stuff here and there, but it was just, I don't know. I felt like I was playing the lottery. I just never knew what I was going to get after one song ended and the new one began. And it just kind of, I guess it had me on edge, and it's weird that an album would do that to me, but I just never knew what I was in for. I have to give respect to Prince. That has always been him. Like that's his vibe, I guess. That's his personality, and it's bleeding into his album. So I can really respect that. And I like the effort, and it's just not personally, not all of it is for me. Some of it is, I'd say more misses than hits, but close.
Yeah.
Ben, what'd you think? You gave this to us.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat as you guys. I love Prince. I would consider him one of my favorite artists ever, but this album is just, it really is a slog at some points. I really like Gold. I think that's a great song.
That's a good one too.
But everything else kind of is just like very either middle of the road or just bad for me. What was I going to say? Yeah, it was like Jared, I think you said, it's like a concept album. He like introduces like a couple of songs and then they'll play the songs and it's like another like MPG operator, whatever.
Right.
But it didn't like have, none of the songs were about like the same things. Yeah. So it like, what was the point of the concept at all?
Exactly.
Yeah. This is around when Prince really started to get into like the third eye, like spiritual stuff. So he's like, you're now a member of the Gold Generation and shit like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, not bad. I always appreciate Prince's vision, even if it doesn't always come off.
Yeah.
In practice. He was definitely an interesting one. Stuff. Yeah, and like Jared said, I do respect that a lot. He can go from like a really heavy, like guitar-driven rock song to like a really laid-back, like pop ballad. He's just great versatility, and it.
Most of the time, for you.
Yeah, no, I just said something bad about Prince. Most of the time it works. Most of the time Prince can like flop back and forth like that. But the later in his career you go to his more like recent stuff, it just doesn't work as well. It's still good. I mean, very listenable, but not as good as it was earlier in his career. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting choice to throw at you guys. It was long. It was 18 songs.
Yeah.
Glad you guys were able to sit through it.
Yeah.
As for next week,
before we number into next week,
okay, I
wanted to kind of add a little spin on our album trading. I wanted to just quick run through each album that after our discussions and say whether or not you'd like buy a physical copy, whether that be like CD or like a vinyl of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So like 100 Gex, I probably would not buy this on vinyl.
That's a no for me, dog.
No.
Eddie Vedder's, I probably would buy that one on vinyl or CD just so that way I could give it another listen here and there.
Mm.
And I definitely would buy the Prince one.
It's a no for me for Earthling. I could be convinced to buy the Gold Experience on vinyl if there was like something, like if it was like a color disc or something cool like that. I think I could be convinced.
Ben, how
about you? Yeah, no, hard no on Earthling. But yes on Gold Experience. If for no other reason than it's a cool like collector piece.
Right. Yeah.
I have a bunch of vinyl. They're right behind my computer. I've not listened to them once, but I have them because they look cool. Coincidentally, they're artists that I like, but I'm never going to listen to them probably. I just like the way they look, and Gold Experience is a pretty cool cover, and it's Prince.
Yeah, it is. So
be a cool piece to collect.
Yeah, I just feel like adding that little section to the end will kind of tie it up a little nicer.
We'll add a an Amazon wish list link under this so you can go buy it for us if you'd like.
Exactly.
Yep. Feel free. We love donations and gifts.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Well, now
we'll put our cash apps in the apps in the bio. Yeah.
Ben's OnlyFans is, I think, is already there.
Yeah, I always link his OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Now let's head right into album trading and first impressions. We're sick. We got a theme this week.
Yeah, we do. And it was not on purpose. I guess it was created by me just because of what you guys did on your own. Yeah. But I gave the guys 444 by Jay-Z. This is the time. So 444 a.m. is what he's referring to. It's called that because he woke up at 444 a.m. and decided to record an album, called his producer, and they jumped right into the studio. Pretty cool. Just like a etymology for the name. What do you think? It's a pretty basic album cover. Not much to surmise.
I like that it says this is his 13th studio album at the top. I think that's cool. Like,
yeah.
Just a nice little touch.
I actually forgot that was even there.
Yeah, it's really small. I like that.
Just to describe it to the listeners, it's like a skin colored, like peach colored background with 444 in big black print. I've listened to this before, so I know exactly what I'm going to get. This actually wasn't on Apple Music until fairly recently. Because he's the title. He's the title creator.
Like a tidal wave. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was only on there, but I didn't want to pay like the $15 a month for like the high def like title subscription. So I remember going to YouTube in 2017 and downloading the every file independently and like porting it into iTunes just to listen to it. So I know what I'm gonna get. Album cover's fine. I'm a huge fan of simplistic album covers.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me if like something is simple just like this. So yeah, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I really like that this is his 13th studio album at the very top.
Yeah.
I like Jay-Z. I don't think I've ever in my life listened to a Jay-Z album front to back. So this will be the first full Jay-Z album. But I am like pretty familiar with Jay-Z. Like, I've listened to a number of songs off of, I think, every album from 2002 forward. I've listened to at least at least three songs off of every album. So I'm wondering which ones of these I've heard. I probably have heard one or two,
but you have.
I can't like pick them out right now looking at the track list.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm hoping it's classic Jay-Z.
Yeah. I hate that I just did that. Let's move on.
I'm definitely isolating that.
Shit. All right. What do you got for us, Alec?
I'm giving you guys 4 featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators from Slash.
Can you guys sense the theme yet?
Yeah.
If you're listening,
DM us if you understand our theme.
Yeah, first one who gets it, will like your tweet.
And we'll give
or whatever.
And if we ever see you in person, you'll get a crisp high five.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We give those out not too often. So
left,
that's
and
an honor.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I love Slash. I think he's great. Some of the Guns N' Roses song, most of the Guns N' Roses songs that I like a lot, Slash wrote. So like, I'm all in on this one. And I hope this one is very, very much him, unlike the Eddie Vedder album, which was like complete 180.
I love Slash just by his looks. Like, I like his work also, but he's one of the coolest looking rock stars that's ever lived.
Yeah.
He's got that like trademark top hat and the glasses and the hair. He looks like Howard Stern if he were a rock star. Really cool. I'm not familiar with Miles Kennedy or the Conspirators, but looking at the album cover, it's really just the title. There's like a blurry background. It says Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators with a number four, which is the name of the album. Maybe like a throwback style, maybe. This kind of looks like a late 70s album cover in a way. But that just might be their style that they've been using for a long time.
It's like that font.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, yeah. What you thinking, man?
Album cover is fine. I just said I'm a fan of simplistic album covers, and this is the definition of simplistic. I'm not a big fan of Slash. I'm not a Guns N' Roses guy. I'm not really a big like arena rock guy at all. I have never heard of Miles Kennedy in my life, so this will be a new experience for me. I'm interested to listen. I have not listened to any of Slash's solo work, but it is featured on the Spatial Audio Apple Music playlist, so I'm expecting a really well-mixed experience, thanks to Dolby Atmos.
Yeah, shout out Dolby Atmos.
Looking at all of the albums that are on Slash's Spotify, like, page or profile, whatever you want to call it, all except for two albums, it's Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. So I'm assuming Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators is Slash's band.
So they're perhaps conspirators of Slash.
I'm thinking that it's like Slash's band.
Yeah.
That he like manages and tours with.
And Miles Kennedy just gets a top billing.
He gets like free publicity from being with Slash, pretty much.
Slash was born in Stoke-on-Trent, England. That is a bizarre name.
Yeah.
It's his real name.
Stoke-on-Trent?
Stoke-on-Trent.
That's his real name?
Holy. No. That's where he was born. No, that's a place.
Oh, no. I asked you what his real name is.
Oh, Saul Hudson.
Well, that's still
that's a tough cool
name.
Yeah.
Yeah, Saul. Saul's a cool name.
Yeah. Stoke-on-Trent is 36 square miles.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a tiny, very windy, rainy city.
Yes.
Oh, you're exactly familiar
where
with
that is.
I've been there many times.
He was born in the next town over, actually.
Yeah, I was born in Bangers and Mash.
Oh, man. On which street?
Wiggles Bottom Lane.
No way. My uncle is from Poppycock Avenue.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm familiar.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Sorry to every English person that
we're actually I'm not. Ben might be.
I'm not. Yeah. Ben was the English there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
So well
then, Ben, what do you got for us?
Is this an English person?
Yeah. He speaks English, but he's not from England. If that's what you mean. Childish Gambino, 3/15/20. It's a date, numbers. March 15th, 20. Yeah. Yeah, it's a theme. Themes numbers. I gave it away earlier before I was interrupted by Alec. Anyway, this album, I think the next time we record will be close to the 2-year anniversary of this, so I guess it's kind of fitting, but that's not why I picked it. I love this album a lot. When this album came out, I remember people were really excited because Gambino dropped an album finally after 4 years at the time of no albums or something. I don't know. When did...
Wake of My Love was Awaken, 2017.
Yeah. Okay, so 3 years.
January. Yeah.
Like I was saying, this album was really hyped up the day it released, and then like it died very quickly.
Yeah.
There are probably a few reasons for that. Every song except for two are just timestamps. It's really hard to remember song titles. It's also really hard to put your friends onto this. I tried to tell my friend yesterday to listen to 5349.
Yeah.
He had like no idea what I was talking about.
That's a tough sell.
But this, it shouldn't be dismissed because of its inaccessibility. It is a really good album. Jared, I know you're a Gambino guy. I don't know if you've listened to this.
I have. I love it.
Okay.
Not to spoil what I'm going to talk about next week, but yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about it more teaser. In depth. Yeah.
It's really, really good. I'll give my full thoughts on it next week. Album art, not much to talk about.
It's kind of the polar opposite of Donda, if you can imagine Donda, but opposite. Yeah.
It's white. Literally the, it's just a white square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like I'm definitely going to get confused listening to this album.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to figure out, like, where I'm at, what song am I listening to? So,
yeah.
You know, we'll see. This definitely seems like an album that if you want to listen to, like, certain songs, you just listen to the whole album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of do your research and, like Ben was saying, kind of commit it to memory, like, what songs are.
Yeah.
And it is bothersome.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm assuming the name of the song is like the times, like playing it straight through. That's the start time.
Yeah.
Of the
song. Yeah. Yeah. It was originally released as like one track, correct?
Yeah.
I think I stayed up to listen to it when it dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you had to go to his website.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing on there. But yeah, that's the way he intended for it to be listened to. And then it hit streaming. And it was like, oh yeah, track 6, 37:21.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Like, oh. But the songs are good. Feels Like Summer is hidden somewhere in there towards the end,
yeah.
If I remember correctly. Yeah. So don't be surprised if you hear that. It's a little bit of an extended edition, but yeah, really good. I'm excited to hear what you guys have to think. I'm a huge Gambino fan, more so recently for some reason. I've been listening to a lot of his music. But yeah, let's talk video games, shall we?
Yeah.
I'm excited to talk about this. Jared, I don't know if you want to go first with your game. Two games have come out in the past few weeks that we are very excited for. Jared's going to talk about one. I'm going to talk about the other.
Yeah.
How do you want to do this? What do you?
I'll take it away. I actually just got done playing before we started recording, so it's fresh in my mind. Yeah, so my game is Horizon Forbidden West. This is the sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn from, I believe it was 2016. It's a PlayStation exclusive. It is in a post-apocalyptic. So the apocalypse is when humanity falls. Post-apocalyptic is when they're rebuilding. Post-post-apocalyptic is when they have rebuilt. They've reached a stage of civilization where they're not, I guess it's not considered a reconstruction era. So we're now living in a couple hundred years in the future from now. The world is creating mecha animals. There are rhinos, ferrets, like frogs, turtles, all kinds of stuff. Bunch of new ones in this sequel. Basically any creature you can think of, they've probably turned it into a robot. And it is being the production, the terraforming of Earth is being controlled by these AI. And they're named after deities like Gaia, Hephaestus, Ares, Poseidon. There's a bunch, Demeter, I think. And in this one, you are hunting down the AI. They still exist somewhere in the world. They've become fully autonomous, but controlled by a single rogue AI. So you're trying to take that down. And you're helping Gaia, who's the mother of these AI, to gather them all back, get them back doing what they're supposed to, and getting the world back where it's supposed to. So I guess they are in a reconstruction era in a way. This is, like the title implies, somewhere in the West. I know soon I will be heading to Las Vegas to look for Poseidon. So that should be really cool. I know you can go as far as California and see the Golden Gate Bridge. So that'll be fun as well. So you got some cool, I wonder if the Grand Canyon would be there. That would be fun. I'll have to look into that. But yeah, it's really fun. I will say it's got a bit of a learning curve, and it had the same learning curve that the first one had. I remember having the same problems that I had with the first one when I started. And that really just boils down to, there's a lot going on as far as combat. A lot of different weapons that you have to use. Like there are sling bombs, like spears you throw, bow and arrow, trip casters, you shoot like tripwire traps. And all of those have variants that each have an attribute like frost, fire, acid, things like that. And there are different creatures that have different weaknesses to different attributes and weapons. And there are different variations of those creatures that have their own set of weaknesses and stuff. So it's a lot of scanning these creatures to figure out how exactly am I going to take this thing down. And I haven't really gotten my inventory the way I'd like it to get a diverse arsenal to take things down. There's a lot of times where I'm missing something I just don't have. And that's just my part. There's a lot of research. You kind of have to do a lot of crafting and exploring and looting to, you know, build that arsenal. But I'm getting there and I'm having fun. The story's great. Plays amazing. Looks amazing on the PS5. Yeah, I'm having fun. I'm really excited. I was just finishing a quest before heading to Las Vegas to look for Poseidon. So I'm really looking forward to see what that looks like in a post apocalyptic world. But Ben, enough about that. You've got the game everybody's talking about. Everybody, take it away.
Yeah, literally everybody. Yeah, so I'm going to talk about Elden Ring. This is going to be a bit of a ramble. I have a lot to talk about. Elden Ring is the latest installment from Software, the Japanese studio behind Dark Souls, Bloodborne, Demon Souls, and Sekiro. This is their first game since Sekiro in 2018, I want to say, early 2019 maybe. Yeah, and literally everyone is talking about it. This game, for some reason, had an ungodly level of hype. It was announced over two years ago. It's a collaboration with George R.R. Martin, the author of the Game of Thrones series. George R.R. Martin and Hidetaki Miyazaki were going to collaborate and make a Souls-like game set in like a Game of Thrones, like medieval fantasy universe. What we got is a little bit different than that was described to us. And I was really excited for it. I should say that my like hype and love for Elden Ring is like a reverse sine curve. I was really excited for it. First, like 4 or 5 hours I played the night it came out. I was loving it. It was fun. I felt like the combat was very fair. I was being punished for making mistakes rather than just like being punished by the usual jank that comes with FromSoft games, which I'll talk about later. And then I had about a week with it where it was just down. I just cratered. I hated it. Game mechanics were just pissing me off. Open world was pissing me off. I'll talk about my complaints. And then I kind of am on an upward swing again, where I'm starting to understand how things work. I'm starting to get more into the swing of exploring and fighting. And it really is an interesting experience, for better or worse. So yeah, my thoughts, I'm going to talk about the pros real quick. The graphics are really good. Even on a PS4, this game is huge. Every area is, you feel dwarfed. There's just so much to go look at. The starting area, you can probably spend anywhere between 10 and 15 hours just going to like location to location, looking for stuff. But the graphics are really, really good. Everywhere on the map, wherever you're standing, you can see a giant golden tree. It's called the Erd Tree. The point of the game, I think, is to get to that for some reason. And you can see it from wherever you are. It's colossal. There's a boss fight where you fight like a sorceress. And her first stage is pretty easy. Her second stage, she like takes you to like outer space and you're fighting on like an ocean. And the outer space is like illuminating the whole thing. Yeah, it looks like outer space.
Yeah.
It looks like the moon's like halfway over the horizon. It's gorgeous. The music is really good. It's really atmospheric. I'm a huge music guy. And Dark Souls always has some of my favorite video game music, especially Dark Souls 3. The music here is great. The boss I was just talking about where she takes you to outer space, she has really haunting music, really quiet, really somber. But some bosses alternatively have like really brash, like a lot of low brass, a lot of percussion, really good stuff. Even the open world exploring music is good. Really cool weapon art and magic visuals. It always felt like FromSoft was skimping on like your character's visuals a bit. In Dark Souls, like casting a spell, you just wave a stick around and like a blue like arrow would just fly out. But in this game, there's a lot of like build up animation. There's things called weapon art, which is special skills that specific weapons have. And in this game, they look really cool. Mine right now that I'm using is a blood slash or something where you cut your hand and throw the blood at people. And it looks really cool. Settings and mechanics are very familiar. They're just like Dark Souls. Sekiro was not anything close to Dark Souls control wise. So this is kind of a welcome return for me. Addition of a mount, a horse, makes evasion and traversal easier slightly. I'll talk more about that later. Every class is viable. In Dark Souls, there was a joke that magic was pointless because it was just so weak. It took so long to cast. But now everything is, I would say, just about equally strong. So you can kind of, there are like endless variations. You can experiment however you like. I've seen clips of people who have basically like a big pizza cutter and they just like run up to a boss and just hold it there and just like shred the boss in two hits. But then I've also seen people with like a spell where they just like hold their like staff up in the air and just like blow up a boss also in two hits. Bosses themselves are really unique. The main story ones, at least, each one has a really unique presence. They're much more like terrifying than the Dark Souls bosses. I think it's because each story boss that I've fought to this point, which I think is four, has a really long cutscene that kind of showcases their like their unhinged mental state. There's got to be a lore reason for why they're like that, but I haven't found it yet. There's an emphasis on exploration. Like I said, big open world. There's a lot to explore. I'll talk more about that later. And then new lore. I've researched the Dark Souls lore for years now, and I've kind of run out of stuff to find there. So now there's a whole new universe with a lot of stuff to find. And FromSoft always really likes to bury their lore deep in the games. So there's a lot of item reading you have to do. You have to read item descriptions, find documents in the world, stuff like that. Now for the cons. The map. The map layout, the map design, and enemy distribution makes no sense. So the map is basically, I will spoil this, the map is basically a giant C shape, and you start in the lower left-hand side of the C. You have to go north to progress the story, but you're not meant to beat that boss yet. And I'll talk about like the losing mechanic later on. So you're not meant to beat that boss. So you can spend maybe 10 to 15 hours in the starting area, Limgrave, and do everything there is to do. So you can go south, there's a little island there, it's still technically part of Limgrave. But if you go east, you are way under leveled and underpowered. I'm about 30 hours in now, and I've gone well north, like into the next area. And I came back and still can't beat the enemies in the area just to the east of the starting area. So you're like trapped in Limgrave. If you're a newer player, you're stuck in this basically like, it's sizable, but you're going to run out of stuff to do. You're trapped in this like round area where you're just bouncing from boss to boss. And if you go east, you're going to die instantly. You can't go north because you have to beat that boss. So what do? You kind of just like, it's just a cycle of dying for however long it takes you to get lucky and beat the boss. Some people enjoy that. I didn't. I got stuck. That was probably that week where I just hated the game because I couldn't beat a single boss. But what's really infuriating is you go north past like the first two major story bosses and I'm still destroying everything. But then you come back to the area next to the starting area and you can't beat anyone. So, I mean, it kind of makes me question why they designed the map like that. I think it plays into the losing mechanic that I'll talk about later. But because this game is open world, you're meant to explore, but you're also punished to exploring, which goes back to what I was saying. So you're supposed to lose. The game tries to teach you that you're supposed to lose the first few bosses because for some reason, a lot of like new players were picking up this game. So they knew that like these people wouldn't be familiar with like the FromSoft method of just making the games really, really difficult. So they're like, all right, we're going to put two or three major bosses in the way that are like roadblocks and you're going to learn that you don't have to beat them right away. But you can't explore because like I just said, you're stuck in like a tiny starting area because if you go east, it's going to be even worse, but you can't go north because it's blocked. So yeah, I've seen people say they spent like I saw a tweet saying a dude spent 38 hours in the starting area before even attempting to fight the first boss. Like, well, no, you didn't, first of all, because there's not even a third of that much to do, but like, that's also insane if he did, because that's 40 hours. I'm 40 hours in basically now, and I'm already like four bosses into the story. Yeah, keeping with the map real quick. It's non-traversable. You can't explore most of what you want to explore because you can't get to it. This game really wants to be like an open world, but still have that like really weird vertical level design that Dark Souls had where you can like go back and like open a door that wasn't open earlier and you can unlock a shortcut, whatever. So like there's a mission I'm doing right now where I need to get to a certain castle, and the castle, you can only get there by one road, which is through a trench. So you have a horse who can double jump, and you would assume the double jump could negate the fall damage that you would take, but it just kills you as soon as you go off the cliff. So how am I supposed to get, I can't figure out how to get to this place. But there's like, the game is designed to herd you into certain areas for combat or like exploration or like platforming, which is really like disheartening because you're not really exploring. You're just going from like circle to circle fighting enemies or like doing really poorly designed platforming. Cause like everywhere you go, it's like, okay, here's a cliff that I can't scale. Here's the ocean. If I fall off, I'll die. And here's a trench. And so I'm stuck here fighting this big man until I leave. And my last thing about the world, I'm kind of rambling. It's just empty. Like it's really empty. Obviously the main mechanic is fighting. You're supposed to fight people, but there are times where I've gone maybe like 10 or 15 minutes riding around on my horse and not even found as much as like an item. NPCs are really hard to find. 30 hours in, 30, I guess I'm closer to 40 now. I've seen maybe 6 NPCs in the open world. There's like no one to talk to, nothing to do. Elden Ring has taken so much inspiration from like Skyrim and The Witcher. There are landscapes that look like they're right out of like The Witcher. There's like swamps and stuff like that. But it's lacking like the dynamics that made that game so interesting. Like in The Witcher, you could like go to a swamp, leave, come back later, and there'd be like a guy walking through that would like talk to you. In this game, like, okay, I'm going through this area. There's no one here. Let's come back later. There's still no one. There's just like nothing to do. And also with NPCs, there's a hub world that you'll find later in the game, which is also completely pointless. And all the NPCs just show up there eventually anyway. So like you don't have to go find them. It's kind of pointless. And then the losing mechanic, I want to talk about that real quick. That's another con of mine. It's okay to teach players that they're supposed to lose, especially new players. But there are like 3 bosses in an entire area of the map that are like devoted to teaching you this. Inexperienced players will run from boss to boss like losing and will probably drop the game. I know for me for a while, it was really frustrating. And there's also a lack of early game upgrade materials. So you're stuck with your like starting armor and weapons for like 15 hours until you like get lucky and get to go like farther north by beating the boss. Mechanics are always bad. FromSoft games have this thing called jank. It just comes with all of them. It's probably a result of like the combat, like the rolling and shit like that. Sekiro, which is their previous game, was super smooth. There were like grappling hooks and you could like do like leaping assassinations and stuff like that. But this game mechanically is a huge step back. The jank, like I said, can really mess up fights. You'll swing and just completely miss, but you'll go around behind an enemy and they'll like 360 track you while doing an attack. And it's just like really, it feels really unfair. Horseback combat is really bad. I'll talk about the horse specifically right now, actually. The horse mechanics are probably some of the worst I've ever experienced in a game. The world is huge and covering it all on foot is impossible. So you have to have a horse. They give you a horse. Your horse can double jump, which you would assume would negate fall damage. It's like when you jump off a cliff, you would assume that close to the ground, you can double jump to make a smaller jump and you'll land and not take any fall damage, but that's not how it works. You'll jump off a cliff and then your fate will be like decided when you leave the cliff. I've had times where I'm not even allowed to double jump. I just die like the moment I jump off the cliff, even like cliffs that aren't even that tall. I've had moments where I'll jump off a cliff and do the double jump and land and not die, but it like takes off like almost all of mine and my horse's health. So it doesn't seem like it should work that way. The horse will randomly accelerate like in tight areas. There's a lot of platforming that you have to do either to get down or go up like cliff faces. And I've like jumped onto like a ledge and let go of the left stick and my horse will just run forward and jump off the cliff and I'll die, which is really frustrating. Dodging on a horse doesn't work. You just like, your guy just like ducks down and you'll just get smacked right in the mouth by like a spear. And your horse can take damage for you in fights, but there's no real like explanation as to how it's distributed. And it's also not distributed well. I've been like hit with like a sword in like the back of the head and my horse has taken all of the damage, which is just funny to me. And then just like overall, like other cons, there's like a lack of polish and like features. You can't find armor or weapons in the open world for the first like 15 hours. Everything I found in the starting area was like great axes, like great swords, like big weapons that like I couldn't use because that's just not my build. There's no horse customization that I've seen. Textures never really load in, right? The Erdtree that I was talking about, the giant gold tree. If you get to a point where you can see the cliff that it's on, it just clips through like the entire map and you can just like see the bottom of it from anywhere. There's like no explanation as to what certain items are or how they work. In this game, there's a crafting system and it's completely pointless depending on how you play. So a lot of the stuff that you pick up is meant for crafting, but some of it seems really important. Like I picked up like golden like centipedes or whatever. And I was like, this is probably an item I can use, but it's just a crafting item. And it just gets lost in your really poor like inventory management menus. Summoning signs where like you can summon NPCs or players to help you in a fight are completely bugged. Sometimes they'll just randomly disappear even in like no areas where there's like no population. Lack of NPC quest lines, I talked about that. The lore is buried really deep, which I like because you can discover it on your own, but you also just get like exposition dumped out of nowhere. There's literally a guy in the hub world who will explain the plot of the entire game and all of the villains to you once you like get to a certain point, which is kind of underwhelming. And this goes for everything, but the community still really sucks. There's a lot of new players in this game, and the players that are good and have already like kind of mastered the game go into like the experienced like community, and the ones that suck are like stranded. And the ones that are good join that like chorus of people just saying like, oh, you just have to get good. Like you just suck. You have to get good. You can't criticize the game because people just assume that you're bad at it. Like I feel like I have pretty genuine like game design critiques and people have told me that I'm just bad and like I don't understand it. Like I didn't realize that your world was supposed to be really poorly made and really empty on purpose. But yeah, some community members are great as with everything. This is not exclusive to Dark Souls, but yeah, I think I'm done rambling. Overall, I think it's solid. It is an interesting step for FromSoft transitioning to an open world game. I just don't really think it works with the Dark Souls mechanics. I think this would be so much better if you could do things like you could in Bloodborne or Sekiro, where you could have like grappling hooks or you could like backstep really quickly. In this game, it feels like someone plucked you out of Dark Souls 1 and dropped you into like Sekiro, where you're fighting like samurai that can like shadow step around you while you're still having like a sword, like an iron sword and shield, having to like auto lock onto every enemy. They just don't seem to want to give up their Dark Souls game design. Dark Souls is really good. It's like one of my favorite series ever, but it's also one of the most frustrating series ever, mostly mechanically. And I don't think that really translates over well to an open world game. Visuals are really good. Like I said, sound design is still really good. World is probably worth exploring, but I think you'll be disappointed depending on your background with RPGs. Like with Skyrim, I felt like every time I went somewhere, I was finding something new. But with this game, there's no real reason to go back to places. I was talking about the really hard location to the east of the starting area. I think there's one story boss there. So other than that one guy, there's no reason to explore that area. And I doubt most players who have progressed to the point where they're in like the really late game areas will ever really think about exploring it at all, because it's all the way back at the beginning of the game. There's really no point to go back there. Yeah, but it's interesting. It's an interesting game. I think I'll like it more. I think I have to be wary of like Stockholm syndroming myself into liking it. I think I'm like forcing myself to like it. But yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. It's still a work in progress, and it's gonna take a long time before I beat it. But yeah, thank you guys for bearing with my rant there.
No, glad probably you got good, it off your probably, chest.
Probably a good like 15 minutes of talking right there.
All good.
Anyway,
enjoyed hearing it. That is something I will never ever play in my life. I know I'm not wired for it. I think I tried Sekiro once for like 5 minutes and I'm like, nope. Oh, and Bloodborne. I tried Bloodborne as well. Nope. Not my thing.
Yeah.
But this is medieval. Understand. Speaking of that, Alex got something up for us.
Yes. I wrote elves on the outline. Where do you guys think this is going to go? Because I guarantee you're wrong.
Santa's elves.
No idea.
No, has nothing to do with Santa.
Ah.
It has to do... Although it is in the general area of where Santa lives, it's in Iceland. In 1998, over 50% of Iceland's population believed in the existence of elves. In 1998, 274,047 people lived in Iceland. And half of them would be a little bit over 137,000. That's how many people believed in the existence of elves in Iceland at that time. So if the let's just say the trend continued until today, where a little over 50% of Iceland believed in elves, that would be like the entire city of Tallahassee believing in elves. Because Tallahassee's population is about 191,000. And today, half of the Iceland population would be about 183,000.
You said this was 98?
Yeah, in 98. Phew. They believed in elves. And the reasoning behind it is there is a whole field of land where there were a whole bunch of folk tales of babies being stolen by elves. And it has to do a lot of like the people of Iceland from this article in the Atlantic. They want to build roads through this lava field, it looks like it says. It's only four roads that would converge in the middle. But there are numerous tales of elves meddling with construction projects that encroach on their territory, usually in rocks or hills. The tales tell of mechanical breakdowns for no apparent reason, freak accidents, and dream warnings, or a series of these things that just keep happening and happening. And everyone was interpreting that as elves are ruining it and trying to stop the expansion of Iceland. The invisible inhabitants of the construction site are supposed to want to deter from, delay, or retaliate for the ongoing construction on their property. So a lot of people are thinking nothing's going right with this construction, and they can't figure out why. So they were blaming elves from the looks of this article that was released in 2013.
How many
interesting
Icelandians? I wonder how many still believe in elves.
I know. I want to know if they like could do a follow-up study.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
But yeah, numerous people have warned that if a road is completely necessary, the elves will generally move out of the way. But if it is deemed superfluous, I think I said that right, very bad things will happen. That's what people believe. Mm-hmm. So it seems like people are almost said that, I'm saying like it's currently happening. I don't know if this still is a thing or not, but it seems almost like it used to be that the elves would determine if putting modern things in the way or roads, the elves were what deemed it necessary or not. So if they started building or started construction on something and everything was okay, the elves approved of it. If things were going wrong and things were breaking, people were getting hurt, the elves didn't like it and it was their fault. It seemed almost like this was like a folktale, like blame it on the elves type of thing, you know?
Gotcha. They needed a scapegoat.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so funny. Like,
yeah.
Over 50%. That's Tallahassee is not huge, but I mean it's not small either.
Yeah, no, that's still
like
that's a ton of people. That's a concerning amount. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I saw that, I was like, wow, over 50%. Over 100,000 people.
I think Ben is an elf.
Yeah.
Like a high elf.
What do you think that
you got this elegance about you and
wow. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And arrogance.
Yeah, that's fair. Fair enough.
You're basically, who's the guy from Skyrim at the college?
Oh, yeah.
I can picture him. About. Yeah.
The college, what's that, College of Winterhold?
Yeah. High Elf. College of.
The College of Winterhold, is it? Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was a real place.
God, I really want to think of it before I find it, but I don't think I am. Hey, it starts with an A? Nope.
Savos Aran?
No, that's this guy's got like one name, like just like a first name.
Tolfdir.
No.
It's not Tolfdir.
Villain. No, it's Ankano.
Oh, yeah, he's from the Talmor. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of look like him a little bit.
You?
If I was like emaciated hair. And had, if I was emaciated, had a widow's peak and had white hair, I feel like that would, yeah. If I looked basically nothing like I look now.
You just have his hairstyle.
Yeah.
I'm not even the same color.
He's probably taller than me as well.
Green skin. I would assume so. Yeah. Green? I think it's yellow.
It's kind of green.
It's yellow with like the blue Skyrim filter.
I'm looking at his picture now, and these graphics are significantly worse than I remember.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
So, I pull out what Skyrim looks like.
I start up Skyrim like I don't know once a year, and I'm like, ooh, yeah. this game looks like it's from 2011, and it is.
it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, we'll have a.
We can talk about Skyrim another day.
Yeah. What's the next game coming out? I don't know.
Just in general, or
yeah, what's the next game coming out?
Yeah, you know,
could be anything really.
Tomorrow, I think.
It's called Vindheim? Is that what it's called? The next game?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The next Skyrim game, or not Skyrim? Next Elder Scrolls.
I don't think it has a name.
This is.
Oh no, it's Morrowind. No.
Morrowind already happened.
Not High Rock. Hammerfell.
Could be.
I don't think it has a name. I think it's just Elder Scrolls.
Teasing 6. Hammerfell.
Yeah.
Hammerfell was already a game, though, I thought.
No, it's Arena, Daggerfall, Morrowind, Oblivion, Skyrim.
Yeah, you're right.
Online. Yeah. Enough about that. Yeah. We can break that. That's a whole nother show right there, breaking down the Elder Scrolls lore.
Yeah, that was great. That was great radio right there.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all we have for today.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Exactly. Thank you very much. We always appreciate all of our listeners, no matter how many of them there are. We love
them. And there's so many.
Yeah, I know.
So many.
That's why we can't go off and list them by name.
Yeah.
We appreciate all of you, every single one of you. Stay safe. Live the dream. Bye.
Rock and roll.